Hey, everybody, it's Kai. I've got a fresh episode of the Corner Office Podcast for you today. This time on something we all have to deal with, but we don't always love, talking about healthcare. David Cordani is the CEO of Cigna Health Insurance. Most of their business comes from employer-provided healthcare, the kind you get at work, but they do operate on about a half a dozen healthcare exchanges around the country under the Affordable Care Act, and they are in the top five as far as the biggest insurance companies in the country.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
David Cordani, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you today.
You've been at Cigna and insurance for a very long time. I wonder, on a scale of 1 to 10, how does the current period rank in terms of tumultuousness?
It's about as complex of an environment as I can recall historically over quite a long period of time. Just about everything is moving in the marketplace right now.
Does that unsettle you as a guy running a giant company in this industry?
Not really. Actually, it's in an odd way, it's the opposite. It's energizing because there's so much need and opportunity to drive change. To our whole mantra in our company is moving, and long since have moved from an insurance company to a health service company. So that dynamic environment creates an opportunity to drive change more rapidly, to engage individuals differently, to support them differently, to work with healthcare professionals differently. So to me, it creates more opportunity than not.
Other than people needing to be healthier, right, which simplifies the equation a good deal, what in a business sense do you think needs to change for you?
I think there's two items, if we focus it and simplify it. You touch on one, but to expand that a little, it's not, you know, just quote-unquote people being healthier. It's just helping to increase awareness that the bulk, almost 80% of all healthcare costs for people under the age of 65, for example, tied to a lifestyle or behavior. Physical activity, a food consumption, smoking or not, alcohol consumption, yes, no, or in moderation. So truly the opportunity to elevate awareness and then support people in their life and health journey, that's item number one. And the good news is we have a lot of opportunity societally to influence that positively. Second is the movement of helping healthcare professionals, doctors, and the like, to be rewarded based on the value of the services they provide as opposed to the volume of services that are consumed. And we've been on the forefront of that for quite some time. And the exciting part, Kai, is if you harness both of those, great things happen for the individual and better results happen for the healthcare professional.
Okay, so you say the exciting part. I would venture to say that if we stopped 10 people on the streets of any city in this country and said, hey, what do you think of healthcare and your health insurance and the general system, they would give it a zero.
I'm not sure they give it a zero. They give it a quite a low grade, and the reason being is because it's complicated and it needs to be simplified. It's expensive, and when you confront a healthcare situation, it's typically a scary, uncertain event. So, which is why I started with the notion of awareness. We need to reorient this conversation from who pays when someone gets sick, which is important. Yeah. We need that for peace of mind and sense of security. But how do we reorient the conversation of keeping people healthy, lowering health risks for people who have health risks, and then getting the best possible care for somebody confronting a chronic or an acute healthcare condition, and rewarding healthcare professionals for the best value they can provide? So I agree with you, and that's the exciting part. Yeah. This is all upside opportunity because we've created too much complexity.
How much does it complicate your job then in doing that, that healthcare in this country has become so politicized?
I think there's two edges to every sword, right? In one way, it engages more people in the conversation because there's a broader public narrative around it. So I'm not going to the politicized piece. I'm just saying there is broader public awareness to this from every angle, from corporate CEOs to political leaders to community leaders to spiritual leaders to families, et cetera. Conversely, at sometimes it's more charged. And emotionally charged conversations are helpful if it elevates intensity. They're not helpful if diverse people can't come together and listen. And what we try to do is kind of convene disparate forces around that conversation in a very localized fashion. So community by community, group by group, to be able to move this forward positively.
We should say that Cigna is, by and large, not in the Affordable Care Act exchanges. You are, but just a little bit. You're mostly employer-based healthcare plans, right?
We're a global company. In the U.S., our healthcare business legacy is largely commercial employers. We have a meaningful seniors set of programs where we sell direct to seniors on Medicare Advantage. And then today we have, about $1.5 billion or $2 billion within the Affordable Care Act. We've been engaged on the exchanges since day one. We've just been more focused and more deliberate in a limited number of states.
Are you then sort of watching with one eye on what's going on with the healthcare debate, or are you paying extremely close attention?
Oh, extremely close attention, because the healthcare debate is more broad than the exchanges, number one. And even secondly, within the exchanges, the reason why we've stayed in the exchanges, unlike many who've departed it, is we think we have a social responsibility to work hard to try to figure them out. And the good news is, in the seven states we're in 2017, and the six states we'll be in 2018, where we are participating is with aligned physician relationships, where we're aligning, rewarding, and supporting value, and actually better results are transpiring. So for the benefit of the exchanges, but the bigger healthcare system, we're actively in the middle of that and will remain there because there's a lot of evolution that needs to happen.
Let me ask you why you're staying, though, because a good part of the argument from those who want to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, whether repeal, replace, or just do something, is that the system is broken, it's not working, and there's no business to be had there, and yet you're in it.
Yeah, so there's merit to that statement. We just took a little different view than most in the industry from day one back in 2013, stepping in for 2014 on the exchanges. Our view was that they would be smaller than was projected. It was going to be a pretty rocky road for the first 3 years. We called that version 1.0 because of the technology, the behavior change, et cetera, and that we and the industry would lose money if you participated. So we went in there eyes wide open. And more of that transpired than not. Secondly, as I indicated, we think we have a social responsibility to try to actively work to make it work. And third, we found some great bright spots in markets where we have high-performing aligned physician and hospital groups. We're actually starting to deliver a positive result, even where there are design flaws, and there are fundamental design flaws. But when you engage the physician differently around their patient or customer, we're able to get to a better outcome. So we've been focused, we've been consistent, but we entered this eyes wide open.
Not to get too far down in the weeds, but do you have some people, I'm sure you have a group of people, you know, down the corporate ladder from you somewhere, who go looking for these opportunities in the ACA markets?
Well, when you say go looking for these opportunities in the ACA market, we have a senior leader in the company whose sole job it was to run the ACA marketplace.
And
because we wanted to be quite focused. And if we were going to work with our healthcare professionals in a differentiated way, we wanted to take it quite seriously. Yeah. So you don't have to go too far into our organization to find the leadership team and to get a dedicated team around this.
Yeah. Let me ask you about running a giant company in a huge industry in a time of tumultuous change. How do you stay oriented when things, first of all, move extremely quickly and have very serious business implications for you?
A few things, and it's a nonstop juggling act for sure. Number one, you make sure you do everything possible to have a great team because it's a team sport. It's not an individual sport in any way, shape, or form. Two, you expend a lot of energy to work to make sure our organization, which is a global organization, understands where we're trying to go, why, and how, through making sure we communicate, we remain aligned, and the right support mechanisms are put in place. Surrounding that, three, I believe and our team believes in being very market-facing and market-focused. So I spend a lot of time in the marketplaces, both in the U.S. and around the world, interacting with customers, clients, those are employers, healthcare professionals, our distribution partners, my coworkers and regulators, to stay closer to what is actually happening than to evaluate it theoretically from a home office. So to me, team, communication and alignment, and being market-oriented and market-engaged helps a lot in a rapidly changing environment.
So when you get out of the office, where do you go? Do you go to like Cigna offices in you know Topeka, or do you go to hospitals and doctor's offices? Where do you go?
All of the above. So I was on the road Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week. I was in a region of the country, in a market. When I visit, I will do. I'll spend time with the leadership team. I'll spend time with my colleagues in a open mic town hall meeting. I spend time with healthcare professionals over a working breakfast. I went out and called on a client, spent face-to-face an hour with the client, with a couple members of my team, spent a working lunch with some distribution partners, et cetera. So you're touching a variety of stakeholders. In a couple of weeks, I'll be outside the U.S. visiting three different markets in two different regions, and I'll touch all of those stakeholders, my colleagues, our distribution partners, healthcare professionals, regulators, et cetera, et cetera.
Where is growth for you? Is it in the States? Is it overseas? Where do you look?
Both. We're fortunate that we have four growth platforms or four businesses. In the States, we have our U.S. commercial employer business portfolio. Second, we have a U.S. seniors business where we provide direct individuals Medicare Advantage programs. Third, we have a what the industry would call a disability business. We call it a productivity business. So we sell productivity services to employers to help to lower the risk of disabilities and help people return to work if they become disabled. And then outside the U.S., we take care of expats all over the world, executives that are deployed, whether they're from corporations or intergovernmental organizations like the United Nations or the like. And then lastly, we sell direct to individuals in about 30 countries outside the United States. So we have multiple successful growth platforms.
A question here about consolidation in your industry. Anthem and Cigna tried to get together. That has fallen apart. There's Aetna, Humana. What lets you get scale in this industry if mergers and acquisitions seem not to be on the table?
So we look at scale in our business as highly localized. So
what does that mean?
Our business is less oriented around national scale or global scale because all healthcare is personal and all healthcare is local. So we look at locally relevant share and try to drive first and foremost growth. Secondly, smart and targeted partnerships. And third, opportunities relative to targeted M&A. M&A will still be a part of our portfolio. So what do I mean by smart and targeted partnerships? We have around the United States a good number of strategic relationships with integrated hospital systems, large multi-specialty provider groups where we help them be more successful for the benefit of our customers, their patients, and we provide services to them to be more effective in clinical quality and service quality for their broader portfolio of patients. That's another way to have a higher impact in the markets.
Let me back up for a minute and get back to what's going on in Washington, just because that still, to this day, despite all the attempts to repeal in place, will affect your industry. If Congress finds a way to do something that makes the individual market more attractive to you, are you in? You're in, right?
Well, we're in today. Yeah. So,
you're more in, I guess, is the question.
Yeah. I mean, stepping back, there's two large markets that are performing reasonably effectively or positively in the United States today. That's the employer marketplace,
right. Takes
care of an excess of 50% of all Americans, and Medicare Advantage, which outperforms Medicare fee-for-service every day. And those marketplaces are growing and need to continue to be serviced and grow. Evolution of the individual marketplace we view as a positive.
So that's a yes, then.
Yes, it is.
All right. On this idea of you having a social responsibility as a guy running this company, I want to talk about for a minute what you're doing with opioids and the idea that you're going to stop paying for OxyContin prescriptions and your work with pharmaceutical makers. How do you go about addressing a huge social issue in this country?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. So I think it was last spring we took a stand on this important topic because we didn't think we're having the right social conversation around the U.S. opioid epidemic. We stepped forward with a public pledge to reduce the consumption of opioid pharmaceuticals for our service customers by 25% over a three-year period of time, which would bring the consumption back to pre-epidemic levels. And we set off on a path to have elevated conversations in communities around the country and then work differently with healthcare professionals. Today, we have over 100,000 healthcare professionals that signed on to a practice pattern pledge to change the dosing rate of opioid pharmaceuticals. And we continue down that path. We're more than halfway through the goal of reducing the consumption of opioid pharmaceuticals for our customers. We actually entered a pretty innovative contract with a different manufacturer with a non-crushable drug, but they're also, the manufacturer's incented to also be part of the solution by ensuring that the consumption stays in check because opioids do have a position for pain management.
Yeah.
And
is the crushable thing because that's what lets people get addicted and abuse it, right? Or vice versa?
It expands the abuse. Yeah. So crush, then you could actually densify and inject. So it just expands the probability of abuse. So moving down that path. And lastly, I was just going to say, wrapping all around this as an example of you raised it in a social responsibility, there's no business rationale for us to do this as a publicly traded company. It simply was the right thing to do. It wasn't being attended to, and we stepped into it quite aggressively and continue to fuel it today with our actions.
All right. So this is a little bit of a sideways question, but I'm sure you're at, CEO of big company conferences every now and then, and you rub shoulders with people running not health insurance companies, but, you know, steel companies and plastics makers and whatever. How often does the idea of social responsibility come up?
Quite often, actually. You know, when you are sitting with CEOs from diverse organizations and industries, and you're kind of in the safe confines in terms of having conversations around, you know, moving an agenda forward for the U.S. or for multinational companies, most well-run companies understand they have a social responsibility. Now they apply it in different ways.
Yeah.
And you could get a lot of powerful alignment with like-minded executives.
David Cordani, he is the CEO and president of Cigna. David, thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it.
I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
All right, that's it for my conversation with David Cordani, the guy who runs Cigna Health Insurance. Another interview, of course, for you next week. And by the way, thanks for leaving us all those ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate it. It helps get the word out about what we're doing. This episode was produced by Bridget Bodner. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive producer. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. Thanks for listening, everybody.